Most people are beginners in Python. Who of you never used the Jupyter notebook? Who is using Jupyter notebooks less than a year? Okay, the most kind of use the Jupyter notebook. So you have everything in scroll. So recommendations. This will be a hands-on thing, so I will be typing and you might type along or just watch, but typically it's typing. I try not to be too fast. If you have a problem, Simon will help you look at your program, look at the screen. You're supposed to install everything before, and if you start installing now, you're a bit too late, you will miss a lot of this. But you can always look at here and all this material in here. I will do exactly the same thing, but the proper information is actually, yes, if you want to do this, just copy and paste, which is not recommended. You want to have a muffin memory, it's just typing. That's a good copy and paste in Stack Overflow, which is not a good method. Just retype all the stuff. Okay. First of all, you should create a new directory, maybe a new directory. I call it your SciPy 2017. You might call it Frankfurt tutorial or something, and then always work out of this directory changes. I'm using Kotlin, and I made a new environment, which is Python 3.6. If you have one, most of you don't have massive environments, if you have environments, you're environment. So the whole thing is you have to have Python school. I use Python 3.6. If you use other versions, it should be fine. You can still use legacy Python, which is Python 3.7, which should work. Just substitute for the Python print, so I think this should be Python 3.6 is recommended. So make a new directory, and then you type Python, Python should show up. That's the proof that Python is installed. There's not a very last version that should update it, but it's fine. It's like 3.6.1, so this is all right. But it doesn't matter for this purposes, and go out. And now we use Jupyter Notebook. So you type Jupyter, and then Notebook. It is called Jupyter Notebook. You might have done this already from other tutorials. And the thing is, you should be in this directory you want to put the notebooks to end up, which is the easiest. So if you CD in this directory first, you just create it and then find the notebook, and if everything's set up the right way, then the sort could start, and you should see something like this coming up in your directory. I have a file in there because I copied it there, there's a download. If you have made a new directory, this thing should be empty. It should be empty, and first we're going to work in the browser. Jupyter Notebook first works in the browser, and Jupyter Notebook in the browser. So everybody has this. Good. So I need to turn on full screen mode so you see more. And the first thing, you create a new notebook, and I have a bunch of different notebooks. You might only have one choice, that's I'm making a Python notebook. And then you have a new notebook. You might have done this for other tutorials, I hope. Then it will be untitled, and that's an unfortunate name for a notebook. That's why the person will take a little. You can put whatever you like. Your intro or your free. And now, actually, this will be the file name, and if you type something like in here, %ls, which is one of these notebook magic, % of the magic, then you will see in here this file method intro extension IP1ND, which stands for iPython notebook. This Jupyter notebook was iPython notebook before, but they changed the name because it's now a different programming languages. And therefore, they changed the name to Jupyter, they are the divide in Jupyter. Python.
Could you maybe increase the font size one step or?
Yeah, so
thanks.
So, you see, the problem is if it's big like this, and the same in your notebook is always changing the screen, and that's something like what you see. Okay, so that's a.
I looked at this menu and I looked at the input cell. But whatever you want.
Everybody has to know, it's important, otherwise you Okay, now this is from the title. You see, that's a problem because always the delay comes from other ways. The driver crazy was jumping around. You want to drop this matplotlib, and I just want to show you the next one. This is a very, very good library. By the way, you can also not only Python, so this is going to be on the Python. So if I type shift enter, by the way, shift enter is a way to execute a cell. If you want to know more about it, there's a lot of help, and one of them is keyboard shortcuts. So I have a picture of keyboard shortcuts that gives you an overview of what all the keyboard shortcuts are doing. And the most important one is typing in shift enter, which is it says you have to press escape, actually shift enter the pencil, and then it's doing something. Run cell, select below, that's the shoot then. So I run cell and it creates a new cell. You have alt enter, then you integrate cell normally. So this new one, the end, it creates one with shift enter, if you doesn't have some variations. Okay. This really might look a bit different if it's an operating system. The shortcuts might look a bit different because you have different keys, macro like this one. Okay, you can also change the cell content. See, I turned off the header here actually, or the toolbar, and you can change the content here. I can say insert cell path, which is useful. That's also the input shortcut, so it's game A, and then you can change the mode to markdown, and then you can write something. And then we have this, which is markdown. Of course, I have markdown. Markdown is very easy. You can build like five different things, like a hashtag gives you a header for a photo, and you can make a nice notebook, and you can write your own presentation. So you're supposed to write your own notebook here. And now you can always have this. There's a shortcut. If I say SK6, then I get a markdown cell. This is a header of level 6, and now I have a level 6 header. Something like this, which is smaller than this. There's a maximum number of levels of headers that can have 6, so if they have some more things like that. So, to be open.
Good.
We're going to spend most of the time in the IPython notebook method. It also works from the command line, or from the IPython prompt, or from other tools. The commands for matplotlib are exactly the same, but when you run from the last thing will be an animation. The animation, as I programmed it, doesn't work from the notebook, it runs only from the command line. Because when you like have command lines, you need to or something to edit your script if you want, and then you can run from the command line, and then it will pop up the window. Good. Let's get to work with matplotlib. When you work with matplotlib in the notebook, you have two different modes you can run it. There's another of these magic commands. If you type mat and then tab, it expands automatically. And I set the mode to inline. If you don't do this, you won't see an output. It will be empty. You have something which is not nice. And inline means the output will be rendered as a PNG, as a picture. And you can see an output. And the first thing, of course, you have to do import. See, I'm always going to type in and then tab, it expands. So if you start typing something and then the tab, it will interpret just its import. Matplotlib. And you see, now I get a long list. Dot, pyplot, pyplot as PLT. That's a convention. You might see some of the conventions of pandas. NumPy is typically imported as NumPy as NP, pandas as PD, and this pyplot as PLT. It's very common. Very often, when you see somebody give reference to PLT, then you know it's a different matter. Matplotlib has different ways to work this. We use the simplest one first, the very interactive one. We will see later on there's the one that there's more like object oriented, make objects and references. Here we just go through this. Let's just turn off the toolbar and the headers, and we get a bit more screen in a different place. Okay, that's the first thing. And now we can do a plot. And of course, we can also say import NumPy as a key, since we have NumPy. So who of you performed a NumPy tutorial today? So you know basic NumPy. If you don't have to use NumPy for MetaLib, MetaLib is still defined with Python lists, but NumPy erase all of this. So you can say x equals NumPy a range 2 to 11, which gives you a new array x, the numbers 2 to 10, so 2 inclusive, exclusive, and you can say y, and y is x squared, 1, and then you have y. You need some data. And now you can say plt.plot, which is the simplest one, which produces a plot. If you don't do anything special, you get the line. Let's say x versus y, and when you do this, it plots, and when you turn and map the inline, then you see the output. You see, it returns. This thing is a return. You see, this is how the notebook works. You always get a return value. Not all my cells have return values. You notice, if you do assignment, there's no return value because I assign this return value to x, and this is a statement here. And then you have a statement like this, there's no output. If you have an expression, x in this case is an expression, or here, so then there's a return value, then we see the return value, which is specific for either interactive prompt or iPython for the notebook. When you write a program and do something like this, PyLint will tell you the statement that seems to have effect was not a program, this doesn't make any sense, just for why, because it's just using object y and it's a reference and possible input, but here you see that. Okay, and then you see that's a list of line codes and you get the output. So you get a kind of a decent output, and the default is that all the axes are scaled in way. The default colors are changed with impact of 0, but it is now. They see some older tutorials and see some older blue and red colors. These colors are nicer. They changed this. So they did some research in color, how colors work, and they have some new colors. This would be the simplest plot. And now the easiest way to experiment, you can do something with your plot. You can do something with your plot. That's my plot. And you can do different things. You can say plt dot, and you can say x label, for instance, which is a function, don't assign. And when you assign the x label by accident, then it won't work as a function, and then you can write something by x as one. You see if I do this, now down here, x as again, plt dot tab gives you a long list, whatever it possibly is a long list, using this small icon, you can scroll down if you want. And most of the time, after a while, the name gives you a hint. If you don't know what things mean, just click on it, put a question mark here, and then press shift enter, and then it gives you, it's not good string, but it's not good at example, so to the next one, say y label, dot string, there's a question mark, and then you get down here in a new window. By the way, if this is too small, you can go, so you can just click on this one. When you click on this one, it opens in a new window, and then it gives you the help. Yeah. So now I have to go back to my video, so can I click on it? So this would be, and by the way, if you do question marks, if the source code is available, this is a pure Python module, it didn't show you the source code, which is available right now, so if you want to, you can look at the source, and this is the source code, which doesn't give you much because it's just a source code, so, but it gives you the help also. So this is typically where it gives the help, and then it tells you something, because the signature is not very nice. You might have seen this one, keyboard marks, it means it takes an unspecified number of positions of keyboard arguments. And if you don't know what it means, so we get the signature, but then the help string tells you, I have something I can specify, font size and double fill alignment, rotor, and so on. And they have the default values. All of them have useful default values. Yeah, you have to set method in mind. So you have to say, if you don't set inline, you set the back end. There are multiple back ends. So MapLotlib supports GTK, WS, G and GK Inter as back ends back end. But you can have different back ends. If you don't set the back end, it just plots it somewhere where it's here. So it does help. So you have to set MapLotlib inline. This would be the first move. So Yeah, if you go ahead and do the three step, the problem is step us too. So, yes, so there's a lot of ways you can change pretty much everything, but you probably have to find it. So, okay, so now I changed the y-axis and so on, so you can set a lot of these. And see, I make a new plot every time. And that's the advantage I can just very quickly. So you have a title, and you can write something. Title and capitalized like in yourself. And you can even, if you want to, in strings typically, if you know LaTeX, then you put it all the way around, backslash, and then you can use math mode in LaTeX, and then you can use all those formulas. And this would be just pi, like a click effort. But you can also use math mode supports, right? And work for anything that's a script. Title access, a little different text you can write with the table. So this would be one thing. Then there's other options. You can say like plt.grid, which is also a function mode. So the API admittedly is not very practical. Written by a person who does variable efficiency plus plus programmer. And didn't use too much. And that, so the API doesn't. This would be a redone, probably that would look different, but that's the way it is. And now you have a grid, for instance. Okay, this would be the first plot, and it's kind of decent already. And you can save it, so if you want to save it, you can save it. So far we only work with one. You see later on you can have multiple plots, so you can have explicit reference and different plots. Right now you only have one active plot and you have an implicit reference to whatever plot is broadcasting. Now you can say save thing and you can save your plot and you can say okay, my plot one. And typically you can specify the type, but you can just write the extension. And that's what we'll figure out as one. So you can save PNG or other formats, you can also save it as SVG. You can do this and you do LS here. So you see, I did LS with percent sign, which is a magic command. If I just type LS, there's no Python name defined as a name LS, and that will give Jupyter Notebook will fall back as a looks for the percent LS. Yeah. If you're interested what actually it's doing, then you can use history. Something like this. 22. And that shows you the figure or something great. Input history. Input history or input this 22. And you export it. So you can export the cell, then you can see actually that it says get itemize. And I wouldn't write how that works, but this LS actually translates to get itemize and call in the background to some Python. And then you see the input. And now we have this method. You can look inside, you can scan behind the browser. You can also use the SVG, which would then be as a vector graphics. PNG is pixel, and you can also specify the UPI. So you can, if this is not big enough, then you can say DPI, and you can specify 100, 300, or 600, 1200 DPI, so 1200 DPI. And then you have highest resolution. Of course, it doesn't make sense if you put SVG as an extension, then DPI, and then you better than extension. So now we have the plot saved. And that's also the method. Of course, now if you want to save a lot of plots, you just write a loop, exchange the data, and save a bunch of PNGs. That's actually a good method if you want to make a detour. That's probably the easiest one. Just make a directory and select your plots, 001, 002, 003, and so on. And then use that for MPEG. Just teach it together with the video, and that's pretty easy. You can do it in nice yourself, and then MPEG has hundreds of options to make nice videos. Of course, you have to change your data to make your nice screens. Okay, this would be the basic plot. And keep it for now, and I just copy the whole thing. Now I'll show you a little bit how you can do more properties. So just over a grid. So you can also do a plot, and you can specify a label, which is a good idea, typically. You can say label. So I make this one, and I can make a second plot. So I basically just say OK, and I say OK, plus 20. It's a numpy array, and I add plus 20, it adds 20 feature numbers. If you have a list, you cannot do this. You would need a list comprehension. So. And then, so, and when you do this, nothing changes. Only that you have two plots, you see that it takes a default code, you change codes immediately later on. But now you can say plt.legend, and then it puts a legend right there. So you can specify a lot of options for the legend also, like the position and stuff. Here it puts a legend and it takes a label. That's probably the best way of doing it, just label those plots. And then you don't have to map it. You can also, if you build label it, explicitly give a list of strings to the legend, but then you have to take care that those names also apply to so plots or as order is metal. Here you will buy it, you don't have to put the name there, that's all. So now let's change the mode now to see how this works. I can say matplotlib notebook. We have a number back end, and this is a specific back end. So when I copy my whole thing from here, just for detective reasons, so I didn't give any use the server, just change it, but because I will upload this notebook later on, you'll get it. And then I do this, you won't see anything that's, I don't know, you have to do it, the whole thing again, you can go in again, shift enter, then you see the problem. I don't know, it's kind of a bug or something, or something in the browser, so you always have to execute all cells twice. And you see it, I execute the cell, you see it. This is cell 26, this is cell 29. 27 and 28 don't exist anymore. But they're not in the notebook, but they're still in the history, by the way. Yeah. So yeah, if you look in the history, if I look in the history, then you can find all these inputs that are still there, as long as the kernel is alive. The kernel is still the one. But the cells don't exist in the notebook anymore. And then you change it accidentally and execute it twice, then you should see something like this. So that's an interactive mode. And now we have a bunch of buttons started here. And this is, if you go over the wait for a few seconds, then you see a help. We have zoom, and you can zoom in. For instance, if I click on it, then the cursor changes, and now I can zoom in. You see? And see, if I, since I added the default for the location of the legend is best. Now I changed my plots, and now my line, this orange line here, would go right through the legend. That's why the legend is moving to a different place. And then you have this one, this is pen, which means now, the cursor changes. If I move it around, you see now the legend is jumping around because it has a location best. It always finds a way where it doesn't get cut by a line. So sometimes if everything before the blind obviously doesn't work, then that's the way to the legend. You can also place a legend outside if you want.
Sorry, could you explain how you get to this point?
Yeah, so you have to go here and execute the cells twice. Shift-enter, go up there, shift-enter. Otherwise you will see why. So you need a, typically, if you're Windows, you have Internet Explorer. It might not everything might not use Firefox. Firefox, Chrome, Brook, Edge, Microsoft. I don't have Microsoft. And I know in Explorer, you always have to click in the cell again. Here I can just type, when I go to the next cell, in Explorer, I have to move the mouse to the cell. Somehow it doesn't activate the next cell for some reason. So, my experience, Firefox or Chrome and Windows is better. So far, I mentioned Windows. So you need a kind of a recent browser that supports sockets, web sockets, and all the browsers that are kind of useful. You should use a good browser anyway. And what is this? So this is interesting, but you see, you can also now click. If you click on this one, then it stops interaction and it freezes a picture to stay zoomed in. So you can work with it, and okay, now I want this, now you have this picture, and it freezes right there. So that's typically, I prefer this inline one, because it's a bit, otherwise, you don't close this and do now point plots in this old window, the parameters old window, they change the old one, which is kind of different workflow. So typically, I prefer inline for experimenting. If you want to zoom in, you should do something like this. So now you have a decent plot already. So I go back to my inline mode. You could have to, you can keep it, but typically it's a bit easier to, because I make cell after cell after cell. So you see what I have here in my script. Okay, there's a bunch of other things you can do. So we have this plot here, and I just keep copying. So of course, otherwise, when I change the cell again and again and again, you can see that. So you can specify properties. Properties are very important. In a very short way. So the name matplotlib, mine has it comes from MATLAB. MATLAB is a commercial package that's used a lot in America. Since quite a lot of courses, so I think I've changed MATLAB. And therefore, a lot of things are very similar to MATLAB. So if you're a MATLAB user, you can see a lot of similarities. And the easiest way to specify properties of a line is a string. There are other ways of doing it. So the easiest way would be to say, I want to have a red line. So if you put it on, there are many different ways of specifying colors. The simplest one would be one letter, but that's only like 5 or 6. But now you see, it's red. It used to be blue. And now, it's red, the next one changes blue, that they have some kind of scheme there. See, okay, this is red, the next one, I don't make one blue, it's called again, 0. This would be one. And then you can also specify that you want to have a dashed line. That's if you look at the documentation, there's a long table of symbols. Many, many different symbols. And I call them the dotted line, dashed of the back line. You can do something like this, now you get a dashed line. And you can also add the markers. So you can have a symbol for the markers, like a plus. Let's admit, the lowercase o makes a little circle. Now, you get the marker at every place where you have a data point. Created numbers 2 to 11, which is 9 numbers, and you should see 9 points. If you have many points, you can also just also mark every. There's many, many more arguments. This line can be much, much longer. You can achieve the same thing. Being more explicit, say color. Now you can set a color, which you could say, okay, I want to have yellow. And now it makes yellow. It's kind of yellow. Looks more yellow. So, but that's one way of doing it. But you can also say light. This color digests a lot of different inputs, and one of them would be there's like 8 or 8 more names. These are typically the names. There's also some documentation, but the names we would be Wikipedia, which are defined in HTML as color names, and which just use the image world. Like crimson, or that's sometimes very long color names I never saw before. That would be one way to specify it. But you can also specify a tuple of this RGB. So if you don't want to find it explicit, you'd like to find a calculated color. Then you just add tuple, you say 0.5, and it should be kind of range. And so now I have 50% relatively different RGB green and blue. And we don't have to change the numbers between 0 and 1, but you change the color. So if we make the one out of it, then you get blue on. Because now the blue is one and the other ones are half, and so on. So you can mix the color. But you can also use a hex string, like you see CSS, they are commonly use a hex string, which is exactly the same as this tuple, just a different formatting of the numbers, and then you can create. These 3 or 4 different ways to specify color can be used anywhere other than you. So this is more objective. You can use a keyword argument. There's a keyword argument. So if you look at the plot, there's many, many optional keyboard arguments. Or the short way would be using this kind of cryptic string. Both ways are possible. And you can also actually, when you add the plot, add properties later. So that's one way of adding properties. you anti-fast, just raise your hand. This is supposed to have a photo long. And I copy the whole thing. So you can do a few things. So, yeah, I didn't.
Yeah. I have one question concerning this state amount correction short.
Yeah.
So my guess is the mechanism is chopped into pieces and then processed
by
different parts. Can you somehow configure the wrong thing by doing that? So is it sometimes
It's easier to read. So if you, this is something if you play into active in the fast, then you see that. That's my take. So you use it, then you really interactive, you do that something and rotate, and you look at the output of the thing, you know what you're doing. That's okay. If you want something that is a little longer, use a keyboard. That's what I would use. So it's a bit more typing, but it's easier to read later. Unless you do a lot, and you depends on the audience. It's just for you or some other people that interact with it a lot, then this way might be okay. If you give it to somebody that doesn't know much, the keyword argument is much easier just because there's core and you know that, that must be a core.
My question was more about, is it an background always only one solution?
Yes, that's true. If it doesn't work, it gives an exception that there's no option for this.
Okay.
So there's unique symbols for the marker, they are unique only for markers, there are unique symbols for the lines, and for the letter, for the colors, always the letter. But there's no R for more. So that's the idea. You can actually change the order. There's no problem. You can do whatever you want. Next seconds. We're talking about how you change the order because each sign is unique as well. If you put something that doesn't exist, then you get an exception that comes on and tells you unrecognized character R strings and gives you. Exception for example, it's something wrong, not exactly what, but at least it tells you the R is wrong. So the R is wrong, so you change the R. That's easy. So you're totally free to use the order, whatever you like. So there's always a thing I was once having to click the rotate, but it's kind of implicit, or you want to have more explicit. This would be more Pythonic. Yeah, so it was, you might know this, that explicit doesn't implicit somewhere down here. And that's the view. And also should be one, and obviously one way to do it, so it should be one, and probably only one obvious way to do it, and not that we have at least 10 ways to do it. And always surprised that somebody has to check yet another way to do the same thing. Because there's so many options to put this together. Okay, now that's what I did here. And now there's many different ways to get the explicit reference. I didn't do it, I threw away the reference, but you can also say an axis is a PLD get current axis. This is a very MATLAB-like command. And now I have this axis. So, I can delete the server, by the way, escape db. Delete the server. So for the end users or end users. And then I have an x, which is my axis. And now I can rotate this axis. And I can actually. This would be one way of reading, the other way actually would be better. So if I add a plot, so I would say here, lines 1. Yeah. So this always gives you back a list of plots, because you can actually, instead of this, okay, let's go like this. See now, lines 1, if I do this, then lines 1 is a list of plots, and I did only added only one. You can also add two plots. You can say plot. I put these two plots in one, say x, y plus 20. That's what I did before. So you can plot it like this. You see now, let me say here two plots. Now I get a return, I get a distance 2. So you can add plot two of them. The problem is if I use keyword arguments, also will get the same. I can use different colors, at least not in this way. You can use a string though, but you can use a color key. Name of the label, you can label that because we have one label. I'm sure you can try this. So,
yeah. Could you show again how to get the objects?
Yeah, so that, so then you say plot OS returns a list of plots, so it would be easy. So I didn't follow that, just show the way, but you can get a reference to this. Yeah. So plot returns a list of plots. In our case, this list contains only one element, but still a list. So now, if you want to have the plot, we just do a normal list operations, and now you reference, now you get a plot, so this would be my plot P. So I'm lazy, I just use P. So now I'm at P, and I do this, so I copy this in one step. I just copy this because this gets kind of a... So I have P, and now I can say P dot set underscore and then tab. And that gives me a long list of stuff that I can do. So all this, most of the objects have a set underscore something method, many of them. and these are kind of created dynamically, more or less. And then it tells you what you can set. So you can say like set column, and now I can set the column. Now, you see, I did something, but something is not right. See, now, my nice plot is green, but there's something wrong with my plot. Who sees what's wrong with my plot? So with the legend is still red. Because it plots, it prints a logic, a legend is red, and then later on I change the color, makes it, it doesn't make any sense. So, rule of thumb, always put the legend at the end, otherwise, you might end up with very strange problems. And now this is the way it works. It doesn't undo it at all. You have to unpaint it. It's just once you slide a piece, once you write on a piece of paper, okay, it's not erased in this case. So you have to. So rule of thumb, always put the legend box. Otherwise, the legend might not go into numbers. It doesn't make a lot of sense actually what I did here to set the color to red here and then to set the color to green. In most cases, so it's.
But that's a
6-line
equal, right?
Yeah, so when I create this plot, it returns the list of all plots. In this case, this list contains only one plot. Yeah, so this returns the list. And I call this one lines one. So because every plot contains a line, and this is the first one with plots. And here I just access this normal indexing in my plot, the first one, which gives me the first plot, which is P, and this P, once you execute the cell, you can see P dot, and it gives you a long list, so you can set something, and I can change the property of P. And here I say, okay, make it dark green.
So when we have multiple plots in the same one, in the single lines, and then you
have yeah, so that's what I did up here. So if you have multiple, now you can say, okay, that's my lines, yeah? See, now it's lines. That would be one way of doing it, but you could also say line one, comma line two, which is tuple unpacking, which would, this assumes that this plot returns exactly two. If it returns only one or three, we get an exception. So now I have this tuple unpacking thing, and then you can say line one plot set something, and you can say set line style, yeah? And I can say line style column, and now change the line style, which is the column is made for the line words. To get this, the problem is if I define line 1 and line 2 without executing the cell, let's say line 1 to dot, you don't see anything, we have to execute the cell first, so the kernel knows that object exists. That's a bit strange with a notebook. You always have the notebook itself, which is in the browser. From here, the kernel of the command line. And if you don't execute the cell, the kernel doesn't know anything. So I can type, like all the markdown cells I type, the kernel doesn't know anything about it, only knows about the Python commands. If I don't execute the cell, meaning when I type in here, if I do something like this, the kernel doesn't know yet because there's no number. Only when I execute the cell, you see a number, which is an indication that it's selected, then the kernel knows. Therefore, markdown cells, as you can see here, they don't have a number. Because the kernel doesn't know about it. It is not required by the line number for this, but it's not just sort of line numbers. But there's no in number, and therefore, if there's no in number, the kernel doesn't go. So if I turn a proof on, you have three different types of, four different types of headings actually marked up. It's just a subset marked up. Code, which is the port, which is Python in this case, could be something else if you use a different programming language. And so the Jupyter Notebook supports about 60 languages, so you should find any usable language. There should be a kernel. So I use it from Haskell, there's very good Jupyter, kernel, there's C, Python, whatever, whatever C does. And then the code will be in its language for sure. And you have Markdown, you can have raw, which is just text, doesn't do anything. And Markdown and raw with numbers and cells. Everything you can do is a toolbar on the menu, you can do this shortcut somehow. You see now this is a wall and if I shift enter, but it doesn't send it to the kernel because it's just the buffer or something. Maybe it doesn't, but it's not Python, so it doesn't get executed. Okay. Now we have our cell, and we can set properties. That's one way of doing it. And just for completeness sake, you can also say plt dot set property, and then you can hand in the object, and then you can say, okay, I want to set something else, and I can say marker. I guess marker style is class, and then
lines.
P, it should be P. So, and it's easy. But now it's just, I forgot the thing. Second. Now more. So now it's a plus. Marker style marker. So here, obviously, because it uses a strange args, if you look at plt, that's a problem. Just why it's like this. If you say set p question mark, yeah, you see this args and keyword args, which is very unfortunate for help because I take any position, any keyword arguments, that doesn't help. Yeah, so that's why this program, the program help will give you the signature, and if there's nothing to help, and you have to reach through here. The properties, but they actually are the same as if you look at your line one, p dot set underscore, and everything after the underscore is typically what you can supply. Yeah, so you have to go around. It's not very Pythonic. It's like you supplying yourself as a. Just for completeness sake, maybe you want to do something like this. Who knows? So property is very important. Now you can make quick, useful plots. And the problem is there are many, 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 many objects. Hundreds of objects for many of these. Nobody really can remember all of them. Typically, you don't want to have 150 types of plots. You want to have a few plots you need. You have to find out the options once and then. You know, and I myself always have people do my own scripts for that. We just go what options we need to look for because they don't use it all the time. Just gaps. Okay. But the way typically things work, so you go and I make them look. I go to this NetPerfect website, NetPerfect.org, yeah. And after it, it's more. So and the best, nicest type here is gallery. If you go to gallery. Then you see hundreds and hundreds of plots. And that's what I call example-driven programming. So you go in here and you look at something what you want, like this. Yeah? So you go in here and you see this is a plot, two sign functions on top, and they're transparent, and they show you the code. You will find different styles. And this is some good things are contributed by different people, you find quite different styles how to do it. than I showed you. So they use the first, this is just putting the data, you use linspace, which is yet another way to make data. So he says, I want to have everything from 0 to 2 times pi. This 500 steps, that's not right range. You get 500 data points in this range from 2 from 0 to 2 pi. And then you, y1 is sine x, and y2 is sine 3x. That's it. See, but now this is a subplot, which is some different way, yet another different way to create a plot I didn't show you. This one gives you what's called a figure, the contour figure. And it gives you an axis, and then you have this axis, and you can say x is still. So far we used only plots, but there are many different other plots you can use. And you can say x is still, and you fill it, and you say, okay, I want to fill between x and y1 is blue, and x and y2 is red, and the alpha point 3. So alpha means transparency. If you put alpha 1, then everything is opaque. If you put alpha 0, then you would see anything. And make kind of pastel like colors.
Can you use the subplot as a method for making several plots?
Yeah, you become the subplot. So you can use subplots if you want to have many plots arranged like in a table-like fashion, then you use subplots. Mm-hmm. You can add as many subplots as you like. Here it makes only one subplot. So far we just use plot, which makes the subplot 1, 1, 1. So far we focus on one. So you can have many subplots. And you can also, if you like, use a concept called axis, and you can place a plot whatever you like. The subplot makes it very nice in the grid layout. Okay, so the easiest thing is just copy this one. So I don't need to import anymore. So now the problem overrides my x. Here, it overrides my x. I just can call this x2, and this x2 does override my x next time I'm going to call something. So, if I do this, by the way, this PLT show I don't need here. This is needed when you run it as a script, when you run it from the command line, you copy this into a file, you need this PLT show, otherwise nothing shows up. But now, if I do something like this, I get the error because I forgot to put x2 here. Now, of course. X. So I mix it for that, I rename my x, so of course in one place, x, x2, x2. Okay, so if I change all my x, x2, just I don't want to write my x, then you see, I get this plot. And now you can work your way from there. You have a kind of feature, and you have this one, now you can experiment. So if I set it to 1, the alpha, which is very nice, then I mean it's okay. If I set it to 0, then it goes another. It's totally transparent. So one, but one, you still see something. So you can see it perfectly. If I said it goes 9, I would be. You can see it trying through. So here, since I have two plots, I get the same alpha proportion. That means one that have different alphas, then you would have to make two plots on top of this also. But if I and they use a SD, they use a string, and this string refers to the first plot, and this string refers to the second. And also just off the plots, you can have different kind of tables creating pretty much everything. And there's many more plots, so if you go back to just scroll through, and there's hundreds and hundreds of all types of plots that they need. So you want to get an overview of line styles, or line styles, and there's always a source code type of plots. Yeah? And you discover plots, you can also draw stuff, and on. A lot of statistical plots, histograms, violin plots, box plots, all kind of stuff that you can do. And yeah, histograms again here. And very simple plots and pretty sophisticated plots. You can also work with these pictures, like a photo, and you can say, okay, cut it short. That's command, cut it short. It's used to be on the photo, you just make it round, because you cut out some things. And so, then you have different types of information, that's even booklet points included. You can have steam plots, flow or something. Pretty interesting. This is nice, playing pie chart. You see, so you have this pie chart, and you see that it's loaded, and that's it. This is the first one, it's just the data, so you have to have the data somehow. within the labels, the sizes, and then you see this is explode, this makes this orange yellow thing here come out. So you have explode if you like. And then you just, you say pi, again make subplot say pi, and then you say explode labels. Here you can specify the format, and they use this percent style text formatting, you might know, string formatting. And since you want to have the percent sign, you have the escape percent sign, hence the double percent here. Yeah. That's the way it works. And that means I want to have a 1.1, so I have one digit long and one decimal percent thing, which makes sense. And then angel.angel, and also you have to set, if you don't set it, then equal, you get an egg. That's what you want to have round, typically. That's why you set x and y. Otherwise, it kind of scales it, and then you get this kind of funny shape. And so, yeah, you can find your way out. Can play around with it and you get this kind of awesome. Of course, you can also set alpha and make it spirit and all kinds of stuff. So, you can do the same thing. The same pattern, once you have this, you can typically guess the names. So, that's pretty much it. And there's many more. But pretty sophisticated, and this is nice, so you can, as I said, you can use. But thank you. Yeah. And you can make a mathematical formula. This is just right there. Here, that's it. You typically use a raw string because you have to use backslash. And if you don't get, if you don't use a raw string, you might end up with like four backslashes, which is not useful for sometimes one. But if you use a raw string, you can get a radius 2. Not you have to use four, which means around. So most of the time, maybe you have a mark on this off. Here, we have to use a raw string. Okay. That's a property, so you put it into the okay, so that's the basics. A few more things I would like to show you is how to put text, how to put ticks very quickly, and then how to arrange subplots. These are the main features. Okay, so text, SK2, gives you this one. There are different ways of putting text. So I make a very simple plot. So it's stripping away everything we did so far, just x and y, which might be my plot. Yeah. Again, you see the return value as you put the list. This is object. You see this return value comes back. If you don't assign it, by the way, if you don't like this output, that's a good usage of the semicolon, because the semicolon adds a new line at the end, and then that would be any return value, and then it's a plus or something. That you write, if you write a percent, you know, we always have this noise in there. Typically, you can always go without a semicolon. Sometimes you need to put a Python script where only one line fits, and you need a multiple line. But it's an indication that the humans don't want to read the text. It's just for somehow we like a fetch Python script. Okay, there are different ways of writing, putting text. So you can say PLT. Dot text, and there are different coordinate systems. I have a list here, there's like 5-6 different coordinate systems, basically tips, basically data, this is chaos. So we have actually two main ones. One is the data, so that means my coordinate system goes from 0 to 10, yeah. Or from 1, whatever it's here, from 2 to 10, and from 0 to 100. And the other one will be the figure, and the figure will be the whole thing. Here you don't see the figure too much. If you do it on the command line, there will be the window that pops up that will be a figure. And that list goes from 0 to 1 and 0 to 1. So we always start 0 in the lower left hand corner. So it's a coordinate system as you see it here. As opposed to some geometric degree, typically you have 0 on top left. You print a page, it makes sense. If you want to draw some data, typically you want to down there. You have to be careful, but otherwise you wipe it. Okay, you have text, and you can say, I want to have some text at position 5 and position 16. And you see, it puts the text right there. And now it actually makes sense to go back, escape A, choose the cell, go back to matplotlib notebook mode, do the same thing, now it works for the first time. And now I can do this pen, you see if I pen around. So now I put my text here, this, data for the nets, and that's why when I move around, it moves around. Of course, that's it. Okay. This is different from what's called a figure flex, You can specify here. Yeah. Now I have to put from 0 to 1 from 0 to 1. So if I say 0.2 and 0.6, of course, you can supply font and sizes and colors and all kinds of stuff. You can do this here. Now, you see, if I do the spanning again, you see the figure text stays put because the figure doesn't change. I change the location of the coordinate system, that's why the text moves around, but the figure text stays there. By the way, you can also place figure text outside of these coordinates. So I can say something like this one point. It's supposed to show up somewhere here. Maybe it doesn't work as well. Let's do this inline. The board where I used to do this. Yeah. And then you can place text outside. Yeah, see here? You do this, now you see it's outside because now I'm 10% outside of the window. It works here. It might not make sense. If it's outside of the window, it's there, but you don't see it. Here, you can see it. The problem is when you save it as a figure, it might not show up, but there might be an option to set a finger. So something you can be careful when you calculate something like this. When you go outside, this could be something if you want to place a legend outside. Because typically that before the legend is placed inside. But if it covers a lot, you can put it outside and make the space bigger. You will find recipes somewhere. That's text. And yet another way of doing text. The other way is annotation, so I can have an annotation, and the annotation I have to add to. So now this would be the way to get the access which I had before. I said get access to the this is the other one, they have this access here, that's this access thing. They edit. That's all nice. Okay, you see, they say subplots, you get an explicit reference to the figure, so you can do something with the figure object, which is a background, you can change the background for something. And this would be the axis. So the figure is a whole thing, the axis is my thing that I can plot it. You can have multiple axes. Yeah, subplot. It's like a subplot. The things. Yeah, the axis and axis. You can see it on the floor. It's kind of a strange thing. Get it? Get current axis. It's one way. Turn it into accuracy. So now I have it. And now I can say axis annotate. And I can annotate something. So again, now I go by. Now it's different. The other ones have a coordinate source and then text. This one has a text source and then coordinates for some reason. Okay. Important. Mm-hmm. And then you can specify two locations. You can specify location of text, and you can specify location of the arrow. So the arrow should point at x, y, and you specify two coordinates. And let's say I want to have it 6 and 35. Because you can calculate this one, 6 and 35. So 6 is x, 35 is y. And then you have x, y, text. So those would be different coordinates. And you can specify where you want to have text. So let's say I want to have 6 and 8. So say 8. And 20. And then you can have the arrow properties, arrow prop, and this is finally known as the dictionary stuff. Of course, you have to have some sort of keys in there, but other that makes sense. And one of them is face color. And again, that's a long list of prop, so face color. Typically, you can use American and British spray.
Props, not props.
Yeah. And then I say red or blue or something. Yeah, you see now it puts it. Yeah. And there's, if you look at this gallery, instead of having, you can have other properties, you can have totally different arrows that have totally different shapes and properties. But this can be useful. So if you're able to calculate this important point yourself, then you can put these arrows automatically or something. Just a bit. So you can make it much longer, it can be 10 lines long, and specify all kinds of stuff that you need. So that's the text, of course. As I said, you can always mark more. So yeah, you need one. You have to put some valid stuff in there, not too much. By the way, in Python 3, you can do the same thing. Python 3, all Unicode, most of the Unicode characters are the Python names. And notebook has something interesting. If you type something like this and then you press the tab, it translates it to something like this. Because you don't have to find a way to input this thing. It's just the input thing. But now you can use the same thing, tab, and you can. So if you really want to write, you're free. So if you want to, you can write the source code in Chinese. In that way, you can delete the stuff in. Then you can write Chinese. Or you can, in French, you can put all your nice accents in the put them there, if you want to. Mm-hmm. Or Germans that can do the umlauts. There are other sources. Okay. And this is just a way, but this is just what you can use in any editor. It doesn't have to be notebook. As soon as you're ready to input the Unicode character, if you want to use it, a different question. So if you have a very mathematically inclined audience, development, that might be okay. If you have no audience in the normal library, I don't know. So other people might make the input thing they can just copy paste, which is a very annoying program. I always get people, emails from people that have names, I can type the characters only with copy paste. Okay, that's something you can do. That's text. I would skip now the next one. Ticks, so that you can cover the ticks. Maybe more important is the subtle concept. That's called a subtle concept. But the material, it's much longer than 1.5 hours, but the thing is, as you see, there's many, many details. Maybe it's something wrong. So. Subplots. And I'll show you how to make subplots. There are different ways of creating subplots. So you can actually add subplots. I can say plt dot subplot. And so far what we did, so implicitly, 1, 1, 1, will mean create one row, one column, one subplot. Or subplot number one. This would be an empty. But you can also say, I want to have two rows, three columns, and I'm going to have plot number one. This would be plot number one. To call the sub one. So now, you can also copy the K. This would be sub six, but it can be more than six, 2 times 3 is 6. Now, you will see pretty much how this works. You see, this is number one, this is number six. Let's put another one between and you see how this works. So you can, either put a comma, or you can put it together. As long as it's one digit, then you can put it together. Let's say number three. Let me do the same thing. Obviously, it's more than nine, then you can get the comma. And now, you can count. This is one. This is two. You don't have a problem. This is three. This is four. You see, you can write a loop, and you can create. You can have plots. And of course, you can plot them. And you can say, okay, sub 1 dot plot x1. Now, everything we did, you can do for each of the subplots. Of course, you need to write a function, just one function, and you can do the same. So you can write a loop and you can generate everything. You see this here, it's not very nice if you have money, but they have an overlay for some reason. Typically, what you want to do, I don't know why it's not before, you say tight light layout, you did tight layout, then it looks nicer. You see there's more space here because you have multiple, the overlap. And tight layout is doing good. There's also some options you can turn off. You can turn off the labeling just by assigning an empty list. So if you have exactly the same scale for all of them, which is not the case here, then you might just have keep the left one here and the down one here in terms of all the numbers to be exactly the same. But that's an option. You can get back if it's the first column, the last column, the first row, the last row, then you can of course, now once we can write the loop, you can generate as many posts as you like.
What's the idea behind using the same variable on subjects and overwriting it? I mean, it seems to work, but I think if you want to access the second part, that might be troublesome.
I think that's the supposed to
be. I mean, I don't know.
That was a mistake, thank you. It didn't have an impact. If I would have tried to plot, you would see it with it. So now, you could write a loop, whatever you like, or you use the generator, if you're more fancy, the same thing, inside the loop and do everything the functional style, more or less. But that's something you could do. So you could just say, rows equals two, columns equals three, four, row in rows, or column in range, of course, yeah, range. Range, rows, rows. The problem is, Python starts counting zero, here you have to start with one. But with the good solution, probably you could say, row index, row and index, and you don't need the row anymore. You can say range, rows. Okay, row. Yeah, okay. I will give it ugly. Okay. I just making this up as you can see. So range, you could just enumerate, but you don't need rows, so you need to enumerate. 1, 2, 4, 1. To make a simple one. And now you can subplot and you put in the row in the column, row, column. And now for simplicity I put in all of them the same thing, we don't have to x and y. And y doesn't plot on the
I think in subplot we need rows and columns, like plural.
Yes, of course.
No, no, that's subplots, but we used row and column the first two entries, and I think you need rows and columns in the subplot function. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not those ones, the ones left of it, like the first two entries.
This would be 6, and this would be rows plus 1, should be 6 plus
1. So, I think the column is rows, columns, and rows.
Yeah. Let's see, rows.
And here you see all these different rows.
I must be 9, not 6.
So the first two arguments to subplot have to be the total number of rows and the total number of columns.
Yeah,
the other way around. So. Yeah. So calculation afterwards to get the
rows, columns, and that should be the counter to make it easy now, just for now.
So or row times columns plus call.
Okay, yeah. Row times columns.
rows?
Yeah.
Plus?
Row times column.
Plus column?
Row times columns.
Make it easy.
Make it easy, make it work.
Zero.
And plus. Okay, so you have to think three ways. So if you talk and program at the same time, it's not a way to solution. Okay. But of course, you have to, you see already, it doesn't look nice. So that's why you want to use your tight layout. DRT. Tight layout, right layout, oops, yeah, now it's nicer. Of course you can have a different plot. Yeah, look at now, I have different, you look at the scale now, I have different scales, 100, 200, 300, no, it's just not that right now. Of course you can have, also have different colors, but just have RGB in there and so this would be something. And if you want to now change it and say, okay, I want a few more rows, and then it should hopefully, yeah. Now we have to fix this. So you can be flexible, and you can make nice. This would be something typically, maybe a generator or so. Sometimes I'm using this ending in the generator to next. Next one, I end the generator. Now, if it was counter, next, do the same thing, then the that would be okay. But if people don't know what Peter Boone's counter is, then this Android comments is more explicit. And once you have figured this out, now you want to move it into a function. This would be, of course, now something that you can do in function, and you could probably have this drop function to use it. So that as an example. So now make it a bit nicer. Say okay. I want to have the plot many rows holds and function is still a you can have the function inside but need a subscript plot all of this data but yeah, so but this will make it a little more useful, now we have the function. Yeah, and then I just say plot many and this mass. Plot many and these two arguments make it explicit so you don't know about the methods of rows and columns. And then in exactly the same thing, but put it in the function. And now it always uses plot, but instead of plot, you could specify what it's supposed to do. So you could say something like this. Plot equals plot. And then you could do something. Look at this elegant. And then you should do the same thing hopefully. Yeah. And now you could say, okay, I want to have a different plot. And I don't know what would be a good plot, so let's try out some dot. You need something that takes x and y semi log y. Yeah. So now we get a semi log y plot, x is sure. Because I am moving the plot, so instead of using x and y, I want to have a semi. Now you see the axis is, now my y-axis is logarithmic and my x-axis stays, you know, because it is. Of course, now you use plot, it has to take x and y. It means a pie chart which doesn't know which x and y. But might be a better way just using a string. But the string has to be something that's better. Now you can just go through all the strings and have the names in it. And you do a nice upstream orders. Something like this, and then we have more details. So now you have a kind of reusable thing, and if you want to go hard with this new work, you won't see anything on the big file. Good, that's a support thing. So that's also an access thing. We test it now. You can do those access that can place across by the line, which is useful if you want to have like a zoom or something. Specify. Good. So, we only have 10 minutes. I have one more thing I would like to show you, which is a bit different and a bit more sophisticated. That's why I gave you the source code. And you want to do an animation. One thing is you can do animations. The simple thing is if you want a post-mortem animation like in simulation, as I showed you, the simple thing is you save fix, save everything as a PNG, and use FFmpeg as you can. That's by far the easiest way of doing it. Because an FFmpeg has hundreds of options. You can have between the frames, you can have effects, and you can have the time between frames, and you can put some time and so on. But if you want something like, then an animation would be nice. So, now, let's go to the console, to the terminal. So inside the console, I gave this download link, so if you haven't downloaded yet, please do so now. Up there, you will find this animation.py file. But this use case, I just explained a little use case, so you can see what the animation is all about. So the thing is, we have this old Fortran program that's numerically fine, but spits out a lot of information to the screen, and one of the information is the residual. So the error it makes, and this error should become smaller. And you always have to go to the screen and look at the screen with numbers and see if the number gets smaller over time. So I wrote a program that starts animation, Fortran program background, harvests the screen output, and looks for this number, and then places the number in the nice image. So you see this number live moving. So this is challenging. You have a number that's produced all the time, and at the same time you want to display, which is called concurrent programming. And as soon as things get concurrent, it gets automatically more complicated. Post-mortem is easy. You have all the data and put it in. That's it. Here, it's a bit more complicated because I want to do something like this. And first, we look at the result of the animation, and then we look at the source code. It's a bit more involved, so, but you might test it. So if you type Python, and then animation, and then it should actually from my environment. And then if you do this, then this one shows up. And this is animation. As you can see here, this is a number of steps. So this simulation steps is shown down here. And this is a residual. And you see it starts at about 10,000. There's a big arrow in the beginning. Then over time, you get an output, and this output is the trend is going down, but in between it is one close up to the target. So you have this, you see this one. This one is always changing. Now I'm here at 1. And after a while it will be 0.1. But I use also this is semi-log here, so I use a scale. How pen is easier now, it's 0.1. Yeah, and so on. If I have 10 to minus 7, I lose the pitch. Since I use random numbers, we run the right time. So this is just an example, but you can do now this. In the background, there's a calculation that uses a number. At the same time that this number is created, I plot it. So this is concurrent programming, which you can do with threads, but I don't use threads. I use built-in function. So you cannot plot and get the same number, of course, as soon as you plot actually blocks, you can do anything. Yeah. So that's why you need this way to put. But the same principle could be applied for other animations. Like you could have a pause going up and down. You could have a circle, you could have like a meter, which after you can draw anything around this gene code. Now for a while, now it will be finished. Okay, let's have a look at the source code. That looks like that. You can see how the animation. works. So you can use an editor, but you can also load the source code. There's this load function, load, you mentioned, which when you type it, the load it doesn't execute. But that doesn't. This is, if you still use Python 2, you should always do this. But this run with Python 2, this Python 3, I like the loop process, great process. Okay, this is a main thing down here. See, this animation is important for Matplotlib, and I make a fun animation. So I need to provide functions, and these functions will be called by Matplotlib. But that's a typical thing when you do convert programming. You cannot act yourself. You have to give somebody a function that they call a little hard to act for you. Yeah? That's like a callback function. And that's important, but otherwise it doesn't work, because as soon as I say show, the whole thing blocks. And I can do anything, you do only method that takes over, and I give it a function method that is good. That's what I have here. First I give it a figure, which is just plot since the project end up. Then I have two functions. This is a function that consumes, and then creates a block. I have to write myself. And this frames is something that produces the numbers. So if you do a post-mortem animation, it can be just a list of numbers. So the simplest way would be just a list of numbers. But here we can use it because we don't know the values yet. They will produce on the fly. So I have to give it an object that produces one number at a time. Like in the variable, you say next, and the next one. And then you can specify the interval, let's say that's a millisecond, so every second there should update. And that's it. But now so all this programming is in here. You see, residual and graph are actually two instances. Typically people use functions, use globals. I don't like globals, that's why I don't use functions. I use classes that behave like functions, which you can do by only call. Then it's more encapsulated, everything has no global, everything is just an instance. Actually, global people don't need any more spinal data. Okay, so now I have two things. This is just a mock. Instead of running the Fortran program, I have this one which produces numbers. And you see I have this call here, which will be called. So it behaves like a function. And that's producing just random numbers. It's just some functionality and produces random numbers. And you see here I count. I count to zero. And I go up and down. See, I count up once and down twice because I check if the count is two, I add, otherwise, so that means down, down, up, down, down, up, down, down, up, and I use a random number, so eventually it will go down. And the important thing is I use yield, because I need a generator here. Yield is something you can iterate over, every time you iterate, you get a new value. So if there's no new value, it happens, so I ask for trying to have a new value, no value yet, I just yield none. This will cause the update. Otherwise, I give the value. The value is 10,000, 1,000, 1,000, and so on. And if it's less than a little bit, it's just a mark that this would be something more worth that actually checks for the value for sure. And this would be the plot. And as you here, you see a lot of familiar things. You make a new plot, bigger on this explicit figure, add subplots, a little bit different API, but it's the same thing. We have X, we have a counter, we have X and Y, which is just at least this one element. The plot is one element, you will see anything. Of course, this is the same. And then I say show me your graph. And you see now you see a lot of familiar. I have the semi-log Y, so the Y axis is semi-log already. Add my type, my label, my Y labels, it is much work. And this is an important thing, the update function. The update function prints out something. Now just append to a list. Get the list much better than that, by the way, because you want to grow it over time. And then I just append the counter, so this X gets longer, step one. And then the Y, this would be the Y value, which would be one value. I want to see all this possibilities. And then I make a new plot. You could also update the values, you have to decide to make a new plot, which rescales everything automatically. That's a small problem with this. If you have a very long one with a lot of thousand threads, that will crash. So this one is fine. Then you need to update and you need to rescale yourself. Now return this line, I get back. It's again called code update here before update goes. You can write the code. So this will be called and this will be updated. So what happens? This guy produces values. Here, yield value, and this value will end up here, and so natural clip is taking the value from one of my functions and hands it over to the other function every second when I need to talk. That's it. So I write a function that does something, and natural clip handles data thing. Because this is the same principle that we find no matter what. You can probably change this plotting here, use all merge, make animation annotations, and use the formulas and anything here. Yeah? And then you just get the value based on the value you change the stuff, and that's plus 3, you have a second. So this would be a basic animation, and you can see you can do fancy stuff. This is something you can do right in half an hour, but that takes too much. But this is the kind of blueprint, and you just need to plug in your own data producer. So you get to change this to something you can iterate over that gives you a value. There's many different technologies, you can generate those, one of them you can use just one iterator, or just know the list of this. And you need a consumer, which is this guy who actually made that. And I decided to make a class out of it, because it's a bit nice. You can also write this in functions using global objects, but it's not this. I was talking fast. Time's up. I'm still around for questions. If you have questions, to ask questions. Otherwise, I hope you got something out of it and managed to at least type a little bit and play a little bit around. MathLib is very big, has a lot of features, and you can spend a whole week doing all exercises. But I think you get the kind of feeling how it works, and you have the basics. And from there, you go to the gallery, you download whatever it looks like you want to talk, and then modify it if you have something. And you always find the information. Most of them are sort of in global, right? But yeah, it is also the same thing. Here's a bit more object on the class, which as soon as you know how to ask. Okay, thank you very much. If you have more questions, we can do questions after the. Otherwise.